150 years ago, in the western suburbs of Paris, a baby boy was born to an unassuming couple, the proprietors of a china shop, who had no great taste for music. But that little boy felt otherwise, and he grew up to write music like this. Claude Debussy ignored the old rules about how to write music for an orchestra or a piano, and in the process, he created a brave new world of sonic possibilities. I'm Tom Heisinger, this is NPR Music, and we're marking the 150th anniversary of Debussy's birth, and here with us to celebrate in style, so to speak, is the great French pianist Pierre-Laurent Aimard. Pierre-Laurent, welcome.
Hello.
Do you remember some of your first experiences hearing Debussy's music?
I remember very precisely that some of Debussy music has been the first one to overwhelm me completely when I used to be a very young child. So this was my first deep, essential meeting with the music.
And do you remember what some of those pieces were back then?
I remember that one of them was the Petite Suite.
And how old do you think you were at that point?
Three, something like that. My parents were doctors, but they loved music, books, theater, travels, and many things in life.
Do you remember how some of that music made you feel when you heard it? Was it something that sounded completely different to the other music that you were hearing as a child?
No, I remember that hearing music at this moment was so strong and burning that I could not accept that my parents would hear music without me. I was very intolerant on this point of view.
Did you ever think that you would grow up to be playing Debussy's music one day after hearing it?
Not at all.
No.
No clue about that.
Well, you brought some recordings of Debussy's music with you today, and we're going to just spin a few and listen to them and talk about them. What would you like to start with?
I think that we could start with a song by Debussy, one of the prose lyrics called De Fleur. And I've chosen this piece not because it's one of my favorite songs by Debussy. I prefer when he's more adventurous in his harmonic language, or when he writes on Baudelaire or Mallarmé. But what I found very significant in that in this case, he has written the poetry. And one can feel, first of all, how musical his French language is, and second of all, how large culture he had in terms of visual arts, in terms of literature and poetry, and not because of his education, because he needed that as an artist and decided probably to educate himself. And I find touching that this has brought him to write also the poems of this song.
The song is called De Fleurs, or Of Flowers. And should we just listen to it, or would you like to tell us a little bit about the text that Debussy wrote himself?
I think let's listen to it.
Okay, here we go. This is a little bit of Flowers, a song written by Debussy in 1893. And the singer here is mezzo-soprano Susan Graham, live at Carnegie Hall with pianist Malcolm Martineau. This almost sounds like it could be coming from a French opera of the time, perhaps.
Absolutely. There is a big French heritage in terms of melody by Debussy, but what we hear in the text here is the symbolist dimension.
The song is about flowers. It's also about boredom, and I could not help but think of Baudelaire's La Fleur du Mal. Debussy refers to the flowers as evil, and I just couldn't help but think that maybe there's some connection there.
Well, Debussy was a complex personality, complex and hidden. In fact, in his music, as in his titles, we not always know exactly what it is about, because things are mixed and they are not also completely clearly said. They remain hidden, often with double sense, what gives to his music a troubling dimension.
You could certainly say that about another piece of music that you've chosen today, and that is a scene from Debussy's opera Pelléas et Mélisande. I guess he began it just a few years after the song Des Fleurs. He started it about 1895, but it didn't find its premiere until 1902.
I've chosen this scene because it is a very disturbing one that shows a lot about Debussy. This is the scene when the child, Ignolt, will be carried by Golo to look at Mélisande's window. And Golo, who is jealous, feels already that Mélisande is in love with Pelléas, and in the previous scene, by the way, he has learned from Ignolt that Mélisande and Pelléas kissed each other.
That's right.
And in this scene, in fact, we'll discover what Ignolt sees in Mélisande's room, and in fact, the passion. So at the end of the scene, Ignolt doesn't say anything. He says, no, I'm too afraid. And this fact not to say something tells much more about what happens in the entire drama than the reality.
So let's hear a little bit of this disturbing scene, yet something that, like you mentioned, it tells us so much by not really telling us anything at all, at least through the eyes of little Ignolt. This is a section from Act 3, the last scene from Debussy's Pelléas et Mélisande. And we should mention that this is a historic recording made in 1941, conducted by Roger Desarmières. And let's hear just a little bit of this.
Ne fais pas de bruit. Je vais te hisser jusqu'à la fenêtre. Elle est trop haute pour moi, bien que je sois si grand. Ne fais pas le moindre bruit. Petite mère aurait terriblement peur. La vois-tu? Est-elle dans la chambre?
Oui. Oh, il fait clair.
Elle est seule.
Oui. Non, non, mon oncle Pelléas y est aussi.
Ce n'est rien, tais-toi, je ne le ferai plus. Regarde, regarde, Ignolt.
That's the final scene from Act 3 of Debussy's opera Pelléas et Mélisande, in a recording made back in 1941, conducted by Roger Desmarières. I'm Tom Heisinger, and Pierre-Laurent Aimard is here with me talking about Claude Debussy. It's the Debussy year, so to speak, the 150th anniversary of Claude Debussy's birth. And it's another area that Claude Debussy was very innovative in, that opened a lot of doors, also was his writing for piano. And you've chosen two preludes from Book One of Debussy's piano output. And it seems like Debussy wanted to change almost everything about how the piano sounded. And you were talking about Impressionism before, but here it seems with these poetic titles that he gave some of the preludes that you can see why the word Impressionism was used to describe his music, when you have titles like The Sounds and Fragrances Swirl Through the Evening Air, which is one of the pieces that you chose.
However, in this piece, he's not impressionist at all. In fact, Debussy is seldom impressionist. This is a wrong stick that has been put on his name. He writes in many types of manners. He can be impressionistic sometimes, but he is symbolist very often. He can be very realist sometimes, very abstract at other moments. In this prelude, written on a poetry by Baudelaire, he doesn't write the entire poetry. He just writes the first verse at the end in parentheses. Like, by the way, the title of each of the preludes. They appear at the end of the prelude, just like a suggestion. And Debussy, of course, doesn't transpose that directly, but he will write music with incredible rich sonorities, very sensual, and present an extreme complexity of colors. And he comes back to what he has said very often in a quite irregular way. That means he says a short thing, then says something else, then comes back to the first idea, then goes on and goes on to another one, and then comes back to a part of the first idea, but transformed, etc., etc. That means he creates a very particular form that is not directional, like a traditional piece, but that is always coming back to what it was.
So let's hear a little bit of it. This is a recording by pianist Sviatoslav Richter. Sviatoslav Richter playing music from Book One of Claude Debussy's Preludes. The sounds and fragrances swirl through the evening air. Pierre-Laurent Aymard is here with me, and you've chosen another one from Book One of the Preludes, Footprints in the Snow. Why did you pick this one?
Because it speaks to us about Debussy's depth and hopelessness. We see very often Debussy as somebody who writes nice, a little superficial, pleasing music. And this is so wrong. This was a man that suffered a lot and has got his own way to write very deep music, a kind of sensual depth. In this piece, we hear a kind of ostinato, always the three same notes remaining the same, and otherwise a melody that is always different, and harmonies always changing and changing. Magnificent, deep harmony that lets us feel that the title is not at all descriptive title, it's not a visual title, it's a symbolic title. There are some pieces by Debussy that are as deep as the deepest music ever composed, and this is one of them.
Debussy's most popular orchestral works are probably A Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, kind of a breakout piece for him, and of course, the wonderful La Mer. But for Debussy's orchestra music, you picked one of his very last orchestral, maybe it was his last orchestral work, this ballet called Games, or Jeux. Tell us about this.
In fact, I wanted to have music from different periods in Debussy's life that would describe step by step a little bit his own way. I wanted to have also music from different categories, yes, piano, melody, opera, etc., and now orchestra. In this case, if the first piece, the first song that Susan Graham sung magnificently, was a little Debussy in the French tradition, with Je, we have really Debussy in complete modernity, in which we can't find any more rules in terms of orchestration, of form, of harmony, of music making. This music is as no music has been until then, and opening the doors for a new era. By the way, it's very hard to describe it because Debussy is like that. You can't catch it, really.
It is hard to describe sometimes what's going on in his music. And it seems like this piece, too, when it appeared, actually, I think it premiered just 2 weeks before Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in Paris. And like the Rite of Spring, I think people greeted the ballet with a certain amount of incomprehension, that they just didn't quite know what they were listening to.
And I'm afraid that it remains the same today. Very often, even maybe people who play or conduct the piece don't really understand completely. It remains kind of fascinating, scintillating enigma. And this is marvelous, because this shows that a big creator can still destabilize decades or centuries after he has written a piece. This happens with the late Beethoven, with the late Bach, with many composers, and Debussy is one of them.
Is there a particular point in Jeux that you'd like to listen to that speaks to some of what you were describing?
Oh, I would love us to hear the entire piece, but I know that we have not the time for that, though it's not a very long one. So we can start at the very beginning or at any moment. The end is not a successful or obvious ending, so it...
And why, when you say successful, it's in that it's enigmatic, or that...
Let's say it's an unacademic ending.
Unorthodox ending.
Unorthodox, exactly.
Yes. All right, here's the opening... Of course, we have no idea what key this would be in, probably. Let's hear that unorthodox ending from the ballet Jeux from Debussy. This is Pierre Boulez directing the Cleveland Orchestra. Some people have said, well, that's maybe one of the tennis balls dropping, because the story of the ballet has to do with some kind of an enigmatic tennis match. But what do you think of that ending?
It's not the first time that Debussy makes a strange ending. So funny, surprising. There are several ways for him to compose the unexpected.
Debussy died in 1918, and he was in the middle of set of chamber pieces, and he wasn't exactly that old when he died. Do you ever kind of daydream about the directions that Debussy would have gone had he lived another 10 or 15 years?
Well, nobody, of course, can imagine what would have happened. This is the case for a great creator. He opens the door to new territories. And yes, this terrible disease that he had has been terrible for us because we have lost somebody who could have still given marvelous masterpieces.
But in his time, he certainly opened the door to a lot of musical change, it seems, and so many people after him benefited from that, I think.
Yes, but not directly, because he was so personal. Well, one couldn't really imitate or profit from him directly. Certainly, there are dimensions that he has opened like no other composer, in terms of quality of sound, of timbre, let's say, but as sophisticated, as experimenting, as permanently discovering as Debussy, nobody has done.
Pierre-Laurent Aimard is joining us today to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Debussy's birth. And you've been playing a lot of Debussy already this year, and you've got a big Carnegie Hall recital coming up that features Debussy and a new Debussy recording coming out. Pierre-Laurent Aimard, I would like to thank you so much for spending some time talking with us about Debussy and bringing all these fantastic recordings in for us to listen to. Thank you so much.
A pleasure.